Hey, beautiful people, you're listening to The Hue Report, a show that celebrates Black beauty 24/7, 365. I'm your host, Olivia Hancock, and during each episode, I chat with incredible Black beauty entrepreneurs, editors, and executives about their career journeys, unique experiences with beauty, and the products that work for them. So welcome back to another episode of The Hue Report. Today, I'm chatting with Stephanie Scott Bradshaw, who is the founder of First and Last PR. Stephanie has had such an incredible career in the beauty industry, starting off as an editor and now pivoting into the world of PR. So I'm so excited to welcome you on the show.
Thank you for having me, Olivia. I'm thrilled to be here chatting with you today.
Yes. So I want to kick things off and know a little bit more about you outside of the beauty industry before your career began. You know, where did you grow up and what were the things that you were into as a child?
Well, I'm just a Jersey girl. So I was born and raised in New Jersey. I'm a sister. I'm a daughter. I have one older brother, one younger sister, one younger brother. And I spent most of my life in New Jersey before leaving to go to school in Atlanta and then coming back to New Jersey because all of the careers in media at the time were all in New York. Mm-hmm. It's funny because when I look at things now, there are so many amazing things happening in Atlanta in terms of, you know, studios and the industry there has taken off. But when I was in school, yeah. It was really just CNN. So I'm originally from New Jersey and I reside here with my family now.
Yeah. So, you know, you mentioned you're a Jersey girl, but you went to Spelman. So
tell me about what it was like spending 4 years at Spelman.
I loved my time at Spelman College. And, you know, I think going to Spelman or any HBCU after having experienced, you know, high school and elementary school and middle school, all in a predominantly white schooling system, being able to go to a different type of a school where almost everyone, you know, looks like you, and instead you don't feel like you're the other, you feel very much accepted and you can really learn who you are, you can own your voice. And I think having that experience has really enabled me to feel more comfortable when it comes to communications. It certainly has made me understand other people and other cultures in a very cool and a very unique way. So, you know, I loved my time while I was at Spelman and am very, very proud to have gone to the school, but I've definitely seen how it's been able to impact me and impact the way that I'm able to understand different people and express myself in the world.
When you went to college, well, I want to backtrack a little bit. As a kid, did you have an idea of what you wanted to do when you went to college? I know a lot of people may have an idea set for like, I'm going to major in this and become this, and this is what my life plan is going to be. For you going into Spelman, did you know what that plan was going to be for you?
Yeah, when I went into Spelman, I knew what it was, but I was wrong. Probably my freshman year, I knew that all that was wrong. I knew that was wrong. And I felt very motivated to find a voice and be a voice of change within the industry. And I hadn't really honed in on it being media because there wasn't a PR major or a communications major. Spelman is an amazing college, but it's definitely a smaller liberal arts school. So the majors are very limited in that sense. A lot of the focus was on, you know, science and engineering, math and engineering. That was like really, really big when I was in school. Still is. It's a great school for it. So me coming in and wanting to know about media studies was definitely very different. Since then, I've had a lot of friends that have graduated and I see a lot of people within the field. But when I was going to school, I really wasn't sure. So I became a sociology major with a concentration in media studies. And one of the cool things about Spelman is that they do have a program where you can kind of define your own major. It's an independent study. So if you're someone who doesn't see the major listed, you can kind of chart your own path that way. And so for a while, I thought I would do an independent major. And then I realized, Stephanie, you need to graduate on time. So let's focus. And so I wound up doing sociology, but my thesis was on images of Black women in the media. And so as part of that, it was looking at how do we see ourselves in the media and how does that in turn affect how society sees us and how we see ourselves. If we don't see ourselves in positions of power, whether it comes to career or whether it comes to family, how will that in turn affect how society treats us and how we see ourselves? And so I wound up studying like the covers of three different magazines, Vogue, Essence, of course, and I think another like general publication, and just looking at them over time, how many times were women featured on the covers of magazine, the image that we see in magazines, were they in dominant roles, were they in subservient roles, and then how did that, you know, come into play? Were they mainly in advertisements? If so, what type of advertisements? Were they things like cigarettes, which may not be good for your health, or were they things like, you know, natural body butters? So really looking at how the media was kind of shaped, and I won't go into it because we'll talk about this forever. But when you think about it also from an international standpoint and how important that is, because when you go to countries that have never encountered women of color or Black women, you know, I had friends who did study abroad, and when they went to certain countries, they wanted to like touch their hair. Like they did. I had a friend who studied abroad, and she remembers walking down the street in Italy and people just touching her hair because they had never seen naturally curly hair before. And it wasn't like, may I touch your hair? It was just, let me get in your roots and feel it and see what is that like, because of the amazement. So for me, I certainly didn't know growing up what I was supposed to do. I've definitely had a path of the more that I've tried things, the more that I've met people and I've found out what it was, I've kind of honed in. I think even the fact that I was a beauty editor before opening up my PR company tells you a little bit that it certainly has been more of an exploratory journey for me along that way.
Yeah. And I'm excited to dive into the different facets of your career, the beauty editor to PR pivot. So, you know, it's interesting that, you know, Essence was a part of that analysis you were doing when you were studying the images of Black women, because you ended up working there as a beauty editor. How did that come about in your postgrad journey? I'd love to know, like, what was life like after Spelman, trying to figure out what that path was going to be for you?
Yeah. So after graduation, there was a show that was on TV called A Different World. And like that song is very true, because when you're in college, especially at a school like Spelman, where, you know, it's gated, you're almost in a bubble. And for the first time, you're seeing people that look like you everywhere. And I don't just mean from a color standpoint, you're sitting next to valedictorians to your left, to your right. It was just a school that was built for excellence. And so to know that not only are you not only the one anymore, in one way, you're not the one in a lot of different ways. And so you can kind of grow. And so when you leave this safe place where you can have conversations that maybe you never had before, you can learn about people you've never learned before in different cultures and in different ways, and you go back into the real world. It certainly was a bit of a culture shock when I graduated. And the funny story about how I wound up at Essence, the truthful story of how I wound up at Essence, was I was a junior in college, and my mom went to a pool party for a family friend. And one of the fashion and beauty editors for Essence happened to be there. And my mom was like, oh, my daughter is at that Spelman. She loves beauty. She loves fashion, but she doesn't know what she wants to do for her career. Can you talk to her? And so my mom told me this, and I was mortified. I was completely embarrassed. Like, how could you do that? What would, you know, that doesn't sound cool at all. But it was wonderful. So the editor's name was Julia Chance. And I wound up reaching out to her, and I let her know I'd be home for the summer and could we meet for tea? And she accepted. And, you know, I got dressed in my, you know, most fashionable of fashion, you know, some white patent leather shoes and a dress. And we met for lunch over at Bryant Park. And I asked her a bunch of questions about, you know, the industry and what could I do. And then I got the courage to ask about an internship for the summer, knowing that she would just, you know, say, yes, the doors were waiting for me. They're like, they're open. And the doors were actually closed. Julie let me know that there was a formal internship program through the MPA, the Magazine Publishers of America, where most of the interns applied in December, not June when I was coming to them, but in December, and they had done their selections. But she did say that I could come into the office as an intern, but not part of the official program, 3 days a week. And that's what I did. So I wound up interning with Essence. I wound up negotiating a travel stipend for myself. So I would commute from Central Jersey, Edison, New Jersey. So exit 10, I would take the bus or the train all the way into the city. And then I would walk down, and I interned with them for the summer. the days I wasn't interning, I wound up working at Nordstrom selling shoes. And that's how I, you know, made enough money to have some savings and some fun to go back during the school year. So I stayed in contact. I think it's really important for anyone who wants to be in any industry is that people always say, you know, be nice to everyone that you meet and you'll see them again. And it's very, very true because I wound up staying in contact with the people that I met at Essence. And after graduating, I reached out again and say, I graduated, you know, ready for that job offer. And there wasn't one because there were no positions open. And so I learned that lesson also, that when you work in magazines or any company, that it's really about having an opening available, not always about you just having, you know, a great resume and some talent and a dream. And so I wound up working in fashion. I went to work for Tommy Hilfiger and then Kenneth Cole in their merchandising areas, and stayed in contact with the people that I met at Essence. And one day I sent a note saying like, hey, I'll be in your area. Do you want to grab lunch? And my contact who was there said, actually, I just turned in my 2 weeks notice. I'm leaving. And I said, oh, well, who's filling the role? And they hadn't filled the role. And that's when it happened, Olivia. So I sent my resume over and I interviewed with Mickey Taylor and I was accepted for the role. And that's how everything started.
Oh my gosh. So when you think about like your time at Essence, and I think that story is a lot about like divine timing and things happening for a reason. So for you, when you reflect on that journey with Essence, especially that associate beauty editor role and being able to like work at a place that celebrates Black women and our beauty in so many different ways, how did that time shape you personally and professionally?
In ways that I did not know at the time. I think that's the best answer. I was laughing the other day. I was laughing the other day about some of the things. When you're an editor, there's a lot of trial that happens. You know, you want to write about a spa, you go to a spa and you try out the treatments. And so I think when I first started at Essence, you definitely feel like it's a family that's there. This was before Time Inc. bought it, before, you know, several things. And so it still was a very family-focused company. You know, people brought their kids to work. And this was for, you know, different generations. And so you would have some people that came in and the staff knew their kids. And by now they're, you know, teens and they're growing up. And then you had some people who had just had children and maybe they didn't have daycare or they didn't want to leave them with daycare. And so they brought their kids to work, you know, and it wasn't abnormal for someone to have a meeting in a conference room and then bring their children into the beauty closet, which is where I usually was, so that they could play with us or find some nail polish or be distracted. And so a lot of ways I wound up, you know, also meeting some of the senior editors that way because we had the fun office, you know. We had the fun office. We had things to play with. We had a little bit of room. And so I think with Essence, it's always been a very magical place because it's a keeper of the culture. It, you know, the stories that are told at Essence, there's going to have a different lens and a different voice than anywhere else that you will. You know, perhaps at Ebony, perhaps at some other places too, but it really is different. And the time that I was there, it was the Susan Taylor years. It was the Monique Greenwood years. And so a lot of that history, that original history, was still there. And I still feel it. We did an interview with a client last week. And at the end of the interview, it's a beautiful story. The editor said, well, what did you think about it? And I said, it was magnificent. It was a way that only Essence could do it. You know, so I think I learned a lot of humbleness after, you know, when you're in New York and you're working as a beauty editor and you're running from one thing to the next and every single brand, every single publicist is pulling at you to do something, you kind of get lost in this like sea of, you know, just being overwhelmed because there's just so much happening. But when I look back, it really was such a special, special time. And I'll also say there was a lot of responsibility being at Essence. So a lot of times brands would come to us prior to a launch and they would say, we're launching this product. We're launching this, you know, makeup line, foundation, hair care product. Will it work for Black women? You know, this is pre-Fenty. This is pre George Floyd. This is pre everything. And I remember there was a brand, I won't say what the brand's name was, but there was a luxury skincare brand that was launching their line of foundations for the first time. And so they did these one-on-one interviews at one of the hotels, and it was very chic. They rented out the penthouse, and you came in, and there's champagne, and they show you all the shades. I am not the darkest person in the room, okay? So when I tell you that I went in and there were six shades, and they didn't work for me, how do you then go back and send the brand is looking there? You know, you've got your vice president of marketing and all these people, and they've written out, and they're asking you, what do you think? And you have to diplomatically find a way of saying, I can't bring this back. You know, I can't bring it back to the magazine. I can't bring it back to my readers. I can't even get behind this because the colors aren't there. The undertones aren't there. So I didn't know what to do. I spoke with my boss about it, Mickey, and we found a way to have a conversation with them. But a lot of times brands would come in and ask those questions, and then they would want to work with us to say, is this right before it goes out? Not every brand, but I think there was also that comfort level. I was also fortunate. Mickey Taylor was my boss, my direct boss, and she had been in the magazine for 20, 25 years. And she's a legend in the industry. Everyone knows Mickey Taylor, you know? So there was a comfort level also with the brands and a respect for her and her opinion. So I think us being able to kind of have those conversations was appreciated at the time. And I could talk about Essence forever. It's just, Essence is a one-of-a-kind experience.
I love that. I could listen to Essence stories all day, but I'm also curious about, you know, when you know it's time to transition to the next thing, because I know after that you were working at Life and Style as the beauty editor there. So for you, when do you know when did you know it was time to transition to a new opportunity and grow and, you know, do other things?
I think you go when you feel like it's time. And how did I know that it was time to leave Essence? I think for me, I felt like I had reached a peak for what I was going to be able to do within that role. You know, when I mentioned when I first graduated, I thought the role would just be waiting for me, and it wasn't, because people were in those, they were in their seats already. And so I felt like I had done what I was going to be able to do considering the length of time that I had been at the company. And I just felt like there were other callings for me. In between me going to Life and Style, I had also been freelancing and doing some work. So I had a chance to work on several book projects. One of them was Mickey's book, researching on her skin deep book. I had also worked with fashion legend Lloyd Boston. He's authored 3, maybe 4 books, actually. I worked with him helping out on his New York Times bestseller, Make Over Your Man, Before You Put That On, doing research, but then also helping out, just style assisting, literally on set, whatever you need. If it's a roll-up tape, I've got you. If it's bring a bag, you know, we went to do promo tour and he had to do the Today Show for the book. I'd be up 5 o'clock in the morning and ready to help carry whatever garment bags and all of those things to make sure that those on-air appearances were great. Later on, he was offered a role on the Today Show, a reoccurring role as a style expert, which was amazing. So I think part of me was already getting that urge to do more within the industry. And certainly I loved, you know, being on set and with photo shoots and kind of experiencing that whole world. So I did wind up leaving and freelancing. I wound up doing some freelance work with 17, with Natural Health, and then eventually at Life and Style. And to say that you went from Essence to Life and Style, they're completely different, you know, platforms, completely, completely different. Life and Style is like putting on roller skates and running through the beauty aisle at the same time. Everything happens so quickly. It's a celebrity weekly publication. And so it's literally, you know, trend, 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 next trend. It's, you know, what images do you have? What can we do? It was really fast paced and very, very enjoyable, but definitely, you know, keep your laces laced and keep going there. Yeah. So I think, you know, figure out when it's time to go. It's have you said enough? But I also think that it's also going before, you know, before you're bored, before it's everything. I think it's time to go when you feel like there's more within the industry to do and you feel like you're ready for that next step.
That's such a good point. And I love that you brought up the fact that you freelance and did different projects in between, because I think it just goes to show that you really are such a multifaceted figure in the communication space. You've done it all, helped with research. And I think all those things, of course, led you to want to start your PR firm. So I'd love to talk about that journey and how you decided to pivot from the world of beauty, journalism, editorial writing stories for places like Essence and Life and Style to now I want to be pitching these stories to editors and, you know, representing brands that I was once, you know, writing about before.
So, well, thank you, first of all, very much for that. I had an amazing opportunity to work with a luxury skincare company called 3Lab. And I don't know if you've written about 3Lab or seen it before. The owners of the company also own a company now. Well, they own, before they sold to P&G, called Pharmacy Beauty. And I met the owners, David and Erica Chung, who are just one of the most fascinating people in beauty as far as I'm concerned. They didn't just want to have a product line. David comes from a background of retail. He's a first generation Korean American here in the US, and his family owned different K-beauty stores where they were selling in New York and in New Jersey. And so he kind of grew up understanding this beauty world from a retail perspective. And at the time that I met him, he owned and still owns Inglewood Lab, which is a manufacturing facility. They do a lot of third-party contracting manufacturing. And they also wanted to have their own signature line of luxury skincare. And that's where 3Lab came into play. So I met them, and there was a lot that I didn't know walking in about it. And so when I went to work for them, I didn't know that they had already had, you know, one or two PR agencies before I came on board, that they were launching their hero products. One was a serum, their H serum. It was like $175. Their face cream, their WW cream at the time was $400. And now it's like $425 for an ounce of cream. And both of their PR firms tried to launch the products. And from what I'm told, it was unsuccessful. There was like zero press that came out. So I knew that I was ready to start telling brand stories, or at least I thought I was ready to start telling brand stories when I went to work with them. And I didn't know what to ask. And now I ask all the time, what is your experience working with agencies? You know, because that's really important to know. Has it been successful? Have you ever done it? Do you understand what a PR agency does? Because a lot of times people don't really know. People don't know what PR is. They may confuse it. A lot of times they'll confuse it with advertising. They'll confuse it with marketing or sales, but they don't quite understand what public relations is. And so when I joined them, I found out that, you know, they went through two agencies. They tried to launch these things. I literally just kind of came in. I had a desk, I had a computer, and that was it. I didn't have, you know, a Rolodex of editors. I didn't have any of the tools that we have now, any of the make easies. But I think it was good. I came in very, very wet behind the ears, to be honest. I didn't know what I didn't know. And so I remember the first 2 weeks, I kind of sat there wondering, like, did I do the right thing? I was like, well, I'm still within my first 30 days. If it doesn't work out, I'm sure I could always go back. And I emailed a couple of editor friends, you know, that email, hey, I've landed. I'm over at 3Lab. And a couple of editors wrote back and they were like, oh, you went to the dark side. And I was thinking, like, what does that mean? I was just like, what does that mean? And that's when I was like, maybe I shouldn't have left. Maybe. You know, maybe I should be on a spa trip right now instead of like behind this desk trying to figure out how I'm launching these products. And so within that first 30 days, thankfully, we received our first press hit, and I will never forget it. I have it hanging up on our office wall now. It was the cover story of the business section for the Bergen Record. And the Bergen Record is the largest paper in New Jersey. And that's where a lot of buyers started to see it. A lot of producers for like Channel 7 saw it. And it was a huge story. It was a cover story. And it talked about youth at $175 an ounce. There was a picture of the founder. And I remember that the next day that I came in, there was more office furniture that was brought in to where I was sitting.
They're like, you're here to stay now.
Yes. That was the message, you know. Some of the warehouse staff was asked to please bring her some shelving and some other things so that I could, you know, really get comfortable. And the cool thing about working with three, there were so many cool things about working with 3Lab. So the facility itself, you know, we had one, if I could describe it, it's almost like a U shape. So on one end, we had our office. But then when you go down the hallway past conference room, there was a chemistry lab. And that's where Sunny and some of the other chemists worked formulating all the products. Some of them were 3Lab, some of them were for Inglewood Lab. And there I got to learn everything. Well, not everything, but I learned a lot about ingredients. I got to actually see how things are made. Down the hall further past Mr. Chung's office or David's office and then past sales was the manufacturing facility. And I could actually see what it was like with these like huge vats of lotions and all of these wonderful things. And I could see the testing facility and I could see packaging and labeling and shipping. And I also got to learn, you know, what could happen with certain things like the wrong packaging or airless tubes or all the things that could potentially go wrong. We also could hear about those things. And so it really was one of the most amazing experiences. I think it was probably the best way for me to get into beauty PR because I had a chance to learn from the brand side really inside and out. And I think when you work with an entrepreneurial company and you can see the owners and you can see how much they put into it, you can see that every single dollar literally does count. It just makes you think about things in a completely different way. It's not like, oh, let's just throw these, you know, a couple grand over here and see what happens. You literally are just like, let me account for every single thing. And there was also a huge ripple effect. So when we had a huge press hit, you know, we would also share that out to Korean American newspapers and they would pick that up. And we could also see where that was growing. And so I had a wonderful time working with 3Lab. We started off selling at Barney's and one Saks Fifth Avenue door. And after working with them, we wound up growing into all the Barney's. The president of the company was Spencer Canis. And I remember one day he came in and he's like, we just got a fax. Remember faxes? We just got a fax and it's for Barney San Francisco. And there was no Barney San Francisco. This is before they even opened. They were like planning to open it. They sent over a PO. And that's how we found out that we were going to have a counter at Barney's. Yeah. So things were just going really well. We wound up opening and I worked with them, you know, on international. So we opened up at Selfridges in the UK. We opened Harvey Nicks in Hong Kong. We had a distributor in Germany, so Douglas and all the stores there. And then eventually Bloomingdale's Dubai. Because it was an entrepreneurial company, we wore lots of hats. And so I remember one day sitting in the office and we were still at Barney's and Saks. And, you know, I remember asking Spencer, like, are we looking to get into more stores or more retail? Because, you know, just for like for more distribution. And I grew up loving like the Bliss catalog. That was kind of our Bible. And even when I was an editor and I wanted to know like what was new, I would always flip to Bliss and see like what was hot. And so I said, you know, maybe Bliss was a good place. And our vice president, Bob, was saying he was chatting with someone at Nordstrom. And I said, oh, you know, I used to sell shoes at Nordstrom. I worked at Nordstrom in college while I was interning. And Bob, who was a retail legend, he worked in retail, you know, for his entire life. He said, oh, do you want to come to the meeting? You come to the meeting. And I was like, what meeting? Next thing I know, it's Spencer, Bob, and myself going to the Nordstrom buyers meeting. I had never sat with buyers before, but his thinking was, well, if you could tell the brand story to editors, you could tell the brand story here. And of course, we have to talk about if we get in, what we would do. And I could tell the story about, you know, all the press that we've had. And so now I'm part of this like new business development team where when there was an opportunity to retail, I would go with them to help sell the brand in. And then it was write the training manual because there wasn't one. These things didn't exist. So I wrote the training manuals. I would go to the retail stores with them. I would do the trainings. I would then do press meetings. After the trainings were over with, we would do like a breakfast for all the staff in the morning. And then I would do, this was regionally. So, you know, hop on a plane, go to Dallas, hop on a plane, go here, in and out, in and out. So I think, I forget what the original question was or like, how did I transition in? But I think definitely being able to lend yourself to new experiences. And when you get in, don't just do what's on your job description. Don't just come in, check the box and leave at 6 o'clock. Certainly think about the total company and where you want to go. And if you have ideas, go after those ideas. If you have thoughts, go after those thoughts as well. You don't have to limit yourself to just what your title is. Don't be scared to share what your capabilities are and what your vision is. You know, they'll either agree or not agree, but I probably would have never done as many things as I did with them had I not. We went to Dubai. We went to Dubai. We met with the buyers. The next thing we know, we're selling at Bloomingdale's Dubai. Yeah. That was the last retail that we opened. And then I wound up leaving and heading into entertainment for a minute. Yes. Yeah.
So let's, I feel like the common question I'm asking you is like, when did you know when to pivot? When was the next thing? Because I feel like we said, you've been in so many different roles and done so many different things in this space. So for you, you were thriving at 3Lab, helped them build this company. When did you know you wanted to pivot into entertainment and do your next, you know, the next iteration of your career?
I will say I did not know. Mm-hmm. I didn't know. I had a friend who I was chatting with, and she said, oh, you know, I think we're talking about work or career, like what was going on. And she said, oh, I have someone that you should meet. Literally, that was it. And she said, you should go to coffee or tea or something. And so I did. I wound up reaching out to this person, and we arranged for like a tea. I didn't know what, she mentioned that she was looking for someone, but didn't say what it was, didn't say who it was, who it was for. But the job, I wound up receiving a job offer by the end of the tea. And that was to work with Usher on his OMG tour. And it wasn't something where I said, I want to work in entertainment. Let me see, you know, what's open or who I know. It certainly was not that at all. I just felt like it was time for a shift. And I think when I was chatting with my friend, she knew that her friend was looking for someone. And because she knew of my capabilities, she just figured that we would connect and it would be a good synergy. And so that's really how that started. And I think everything that I had done prior to that helped prepare me for that moment, certainly. When I think about the fast pace of life and style, not the reporting of it, but just like the being able to pivot quickly and being able to identify things, that got me ready. Understanding, you know, international business and different cultures with 3Lab, like that got me ready for that. Everything that I did previously certainly prepared me for that role. And it certainly prepared me for everything that followed from there as well.
Yeah. I mean, that's an incredible career highlight. And I have to ask, like, what was that experience like for you stepping into the world of entertainment? You said, you know, all of your previous experiences prepared you, but when you were in it, what was that like?
It was amazing. It was definitely amazing. It was also another bubble, I'll say, because when you work in entertainment, there are so many different aspects of it. You know, you don't have time for imperfection. You don't, everything is going to move very quickly. Depending on, you know, who you're working with, Usher has an amazing career, you know, as an artist, as a musician, as a philanthropist, as an actor. And there were so many things that were going on. So definitely being able to think outside the box, utilize all the resources, and then being able to move quickly from there. Definitely knowing to have a plan A and a plan B all the way through Z, certainly because things shift so quickly within the entertainment world. And one of the phrases that I take with me is one of the phrases that that he was taught from one of his mentors. And that was, you know, be ready so you don't have to get ready. Always just be ready. It's not about, oh, let me figure it out. So it's constantly. So I think working there was amazing, but because it was entertainment and it was extremely private, I found myself working a lot to make sure that everything was flowing. But at the same time, it wasn't like I came home at 6 o'clock and I called up a girlfriend and said, you know, hey girl, guess what happened? There was never that moment. the hours were certainly long. A lot of times we're dealing with New York, you know, East Coast. We're also dealing with West Coast. Sometimes we're dealing with different international things as well. So making sure that, you know, if something was happening on that time zone, that the work just kept going. It wasn't like, well, it's 6 o'clock when we clock out now. No, let's make sure that everything is, you know, complete on the side or whatever meeting is done, that that happens. So I'll just like fast pace comes to mind, very private comes to mind, and also very proud, you know, and wanting to make sure that everything was the way that it needed to be. So,
yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. I know that's like one of those experiences you'll never, ever forget in life.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in the midst of this, when does First and Last PR come about? When do you launch this and make this return to your, you know, beauty roots and in this way?
I think, you know, First and Last PR came about when the tour ended. And I remember one day, you know, hopping out of a car, and we were like heading to a point, we're doing something. And I remember seeing one of my editor friends, I actually saw Julie, and it was like, hey, I haven't seen you in a long time. And I was like, I know. But then I was like, I gotta go. It was like, and I kind of remembered that world for a second. And I think for me, I've always had an entrepreneurial bug in my system. My grandfather was an entrepreneur growing up. He owned his own exterminating company. He owned his own restaurant. Then he owned his own exterminating company. So two ends of the stick on that one for sure. And my brother and I used to go out on jobs with him. We didn't go in and kill bugs, but he would certainly pick us up from our parents' home, and he would take us in his truck. We would probably fall asleep waiting for him in the truck. And he would go into someone's home and he would work and then come back. And then, you know, we'd either work out in his garden or he would make us dinner, we'd hang out. So I always saw that strong work ethic growing up. And even with my parents, I would go into their office. My dad worked in finance as a financial planner. My mom also worked, you know, in corporate. And so on the weekends, they would have us go in and I would do office admin things, if you will. You know, I would staple brochures if they needed it to. I would do filing if they needed it to. So I was always exposed to work from a young age. And I think I've always wanted to have my own company. I've always felt that that within me. But at the same time, I felt that I had to be a certain something in order for that. I had to be a certain age. I had to have this. I had to have that. Well, I will tell you, you do a world tour with a Grammy Award winning artist, and you just know at that point you can really do anything. You don't have to wait until you are this age, you have this qualifier, someone has given you permission. You just know that at that point, whatever you want to do, you can do. And that's what happened. So I started First and Last PR really from referral. Once I started getting back into beauty, I let people know what I was doing. And I kind of tiptoed into it. You know, I was working from my apartment at the time. I had a one-bedroom apartment. And so I set up. And then the more clients I had, I realized I couldn't work from there. This is pre-pandemic. If only we knew back then. You know, then. So I wound up renting my first office space in downtown Inglewood. And that's when I knew that I'm going to stick with this, you know. So we set everything up. We went through all the legal process, and referral after referral, here we are over 10 years later.
Yes. And you've been working with so many incredible brands over this 10 years. But I think you touched on something earlier that I want to elaborate on. You feel like you've said a lot of people don't know the difference between public relations, advertising, and, you know, what exactly it is that public relations is. So can you describe, you know, the services that your firm offers and what PR is?
Sure. Well, I think, you know, public relations really is brand building. And in a very simple sense, we're a company's voice and also the gatekeepers. You know, but what folds under that umbrella can be a whole host of things. The way that I look at it for PR and our role, we're like a brand's best friend, if we will. You know, we're the ones that can tell you all the things about the brand in the right way. So we're not advertising. We're not going to pay for a placement and secure this. We really are here to look at what the brand is from a total, whether it be from a product standpoint, whether it be from a launch standpoint, all the different offerings, and help to create that story so that the consumer can understand what it is. And so we work with our brands and we partner with them in unique ways, and also find ways to look for unique experiences to let that story be told in a louder version. So who else can we align with that makes sense for you? What else can we do so we can also grow that, so that your brand is living? It's not just, you know, on a shelf, but it's actually actionable and people can really get to know it. I think nowadays with brands, it's so important to know who's behind the brand, what the brand stands for, what that company culture is. And so we find really cool ways of doing that. And so for our company, we offer, you know, just a range of services. And I think it's because of my background and my team's background within the industry. We do certainly traditional things and all of the, like, the must-haves in PR. We write press releases. We create your brand kits. We can distribute that to press. We can make sure that we secure stories. We can set up interviews. We do all of the media relations traditional things for print, online, television, radio, podcasts, etc. But in addition to traditional PR, we also handle social media marketing. So that means that we can deal with managing your Instagram, your TikTok pages, and coming up with campaigns and influencer programs. We can manage all of that as well, because that is a new form of media. It's a digital media that we handle as well. We also can produce photo shoots, because we have a background in producing photo shoots. And so that can be photo shoots for founders, for models, that can be for still life photography, that can be anything under the sun. And I think where it becomes relevant is that, going back to that, telling that brand story, it's really important that you tell the brand story in the right way. You know, we're not a company that believes in quality and quantity over quantity. It's definitely a quality issue for us. Are we connecting you with the right people? And that's always our guarantee. You know, we will connect you with the right people and the right stories to make sure that your story is being told in the right way. And so we certainly look at that. And then also events, whether that be a virtual event, whether that be live, looking at launches. We partner with different clients on events like Essence Fest and Curl Fest. We've also produced international tours, helping to launch products, you know, in places like Singapore. We've done events in the Hamptons, out in LA. It just really, really depends on what that is to really help bring that brand to life. So yeah, so there's a lot that goes into public relations, but in short, what PR is for us, it's about the connection. It's about telling that brand story and connecting you to the right people to have that brand story told in a multitude of ways across a multitude of platforms.
Yes, and I think what's so fun, I think, about your firm is that you represent so many fun clients, so many incredible brands. So for you right now, who's on your roster, and like what? I know you only work, you know, you work with brands that are incredibly exciting in the space. So shout some of them out that you're currently working with.
I'll have to say, Olivia, we are really, really lucky.
Yes.
We are really, really lucky to work with some amazing brands. And I'll say that, you know, one qualifier for us when it comes to brands, and I tell this to, you know, our team and people who want to work with us, is our clients have to be nice. I think that there's also, you know, an old thinking, you know, back in advertising world or back in any industry, that you just talk to people any old way. And that's not true with us. Our clients have to be really, really nice. So we're super fortunate to work with brands, including Bevel, which is a men's grooming brand. It's an award-winning, phenomenal men's grooming brand that was founded by Tristan Walker. And They're, I don't know if I should like go on and on and on about the brands, but
yeah, definitely. Let's dive into them, because I feel like I said, you represent so many good brands and a lot of them that Thank I you. Use personally. So let's talk about them.
Yeah. Well, Bevel is, you know, and all our brands have to be solution focused and solving some type of an issue that we can really like dive into. So Bevel, for instance, they're a men's grooming brand that was founded by Tristan Walker when he was working on Wall Street. And He was trying to simply shave. He was a Black man who could not find a shaving product that would allow him to get a clean, smooth shave without having razor bumps, which would then lead to dark marks. What kind of a problem are we having in the 2000s, you know, when you can't simply shave without having an issue? And so Tristan wound up leaving his job. I won't go into the whole entire story, but he wound up moving out to Palo Alto. And eventually he came up with this idea to have a razor that you could actually shave with. And so that one key award-winning product has now turned into a phenomenal line of products. It's a solution-focused grooming line for Black men, and their products from head to toe, everything from shampoo to stylers to skincare to even a bald balm. It's an SPF that you can use for a bald head so that you don't wind up burning your hair. Your head, it helps you avoid skin cancer, and it also mattifies. So really amazing, solution-focused grooming line for Black men. Really phenomenal. On another scale, you know, from men's grooming, we also work with a makeup brand called the Lip Bar. You may have heard of before.
I love Melissa. I love the Lip Bar.
Melissa's phenomenal. And so they have so much going on right now.
I just saw the Slutty Vegan collab.
Sold out. Oh, sold my God. Out. So, you know, we were chatting because I think people are so familiar with the Lip Bar as being a lip product, but they really do have a full range of products. And what I love is that Melissa's taken everything, again, solution-oriented. How can we make makeup products that are easy to use for real women who are on the go? Maybe you don't know how to contour. Maybe you don't know your undertones. The Lip Bar will solve that problem for you. And so they recently been just selling out of products. Their products are now cult favorites. Mm-hmm. I was really offended because Rich Auntie sold out. Again, they relaunched Rich Auntie, one of their new lipsticks, and it sold out within a day. Slutty Vegan collaboration sold out in less than a week. Rich Auntie sold out in a day. I was going to go buy it. It's already gone.
Oh just my gosh. Like,
doggone
Boss,
it.
Boss Lady is my favorite shade. That red.
Yes. Yes.
So good.
Phenomenal. Phenomenal. Yes. So we work with the Lip Bar. Also in the makeup category, work with Paranova, which is a tin-free, vegan-friendly line that was founded by Rachel James, who is a nail-obsessed creative, also the owner of Paranova Studio in Chicago. And the funny story with Paranova is that when we had our office in Englewood, we're now based in Jersey City, I, on a lunch break, was out at one of the cute little boutiques downtown, and I happened to see Paranova in the boutique, and I did a cold call and said, oh, I just saw your nail polish line. I think it's great. If you ever want PR, you know, let me know. And at the time, they weren't because they were so new. And then about a year later, she was referred to us, and it just came full circle. And so we've been fortunate to work with Paranova for the past several years. We've been honored to see them win countless awards and to grow to where they are now. They've launched a gel collection. They now have nail care. And so we love seeing brands that have gone from their initial concept or their initial stage and then being able to see them really continue to develop. So lots of exciting things coming down the pike for Paranova as well, some of which I can't share at the moment, but really amazing line and really phenomenal. Our first client ever, and still our client to this day, is Oyen Handmade, which is a natural line of products for men, women, and babies that was founded by Jamila Benu in Baltimore. And I know there are so many lines in the market now that are natural, but if you think back to almost 20 years ago, there weren't many, and that's really how the line started. You know, Jamila was looking for natural products, and she couldn't find any and began mixing things up in her kitchen and then sampling them out to different friends and family, and eventually she wound up packaging them to sell them. But I think what's cool about Jamila, and I think what reminds me somewhat of 3Lab, is that they do all of their own manufacturing in-house. And so they do have a beautiful facility. They just moved into a new facility in Baltimore that's phenomenal. It was built from the ground up, very modern, very chic. And they're just phenomenal people, super creative. Their products smell good. They make you feel good. And they work. So we have Oyen Handmade. We expanded it into lifestyle last year also. I think when we started up with First and Last, one of the questions was, are we, you know, going to be everything to everyone? And initially I thought maybe because, you know, I have a background in fashion, so we could do fashion with this. But then I said, well, let's really hone in on beauty because that's really where our sweet spot is. But everything in life needs growth, and so does the company. And so in our lifestyle division, we're also fortunate to work with Be Rooted, which was the first Black-owned stationery company in Target. It was founded by Jasmine Foster. And when I tell you that every day working with Be Rooted is exciting, it really and truly is. Jasmine is full of so many wonderful ideas. She is or has taken what was her original concept of, you know, journals, and will be expanding it into new areas of gaming and gifting this holiday season, and literally launching, not even doubling her product line, like tripling and quadrupling her product line. So lots of amazing things there. But when I hear about people's reactions to her products and how affirming they are and how much they love them and how much I think people need, you know, moments of self-care, and they need those journals, and you need to stay focused, really is great. So we work with some amazing companies. We work with a K-beauty brand called Sespring. They've taken the K-beauty routine and simplified it for modern day. So they've pared it down and just really have phenomenal, easy to use products. They're super fun. They're super fun, always full of ideas and also open to ideas. And so I think that makes it really great. I don't know how many brands you want me to list. We work with a CBD focused acne line called RAF 5. I could keep going.
I mean, bottom line, you have such a stacked roster of clients, and I think it's so beautiful. Like, just working with so many diverse founders. And like you said, everything is solution driven. Like, these brands are rooted in purpose. And I think that's what makes the biggest difference in the beauty industry. You know, there's so many launches, a million launches coming out, so many, like all the time. But to have a roster of such thoughtful founders and just the products themselves are incredible. It's just a test. Like, it's such a great, I'm feeling to work with such solution driven brands.
Yeah. There's one brand, when you speak about founders and purpose, that we just started working with that really is like legendary, like really, really, really is legendary. There's it's called Dr. Thrower Skincare, and he's a dermatologist based in Miami, Florida. He is kind of known as like the godfather of ethnic skincare. And because we're saying ethnic, you know that he's been in the game. It's not like melanin rich. We're not using these like modern terms, you know, melanated, pop it. No, he's ethnic skincare. But Dr. Thrower has been a practicing dermatologist for 30 years, specializing in skin of color. He has been the first dermatologist for the NBA, the first Black dermatologist. And he's been practicing in the Miami Heat's dermatologist for 25 years.
Wow.
Like 25 years doing that. 30 years. He's authored 3 different books. He has a product line, and he has a beautiful med spa where he sees people. And most of it's corrective. And I think it's so unique because when you think about skin of color, one of the things that excites me about what brands are doing is that there are so many areas that just haven't been studied before. You know, when I was an editor, I remember going to the AAD conference, the American Academy of Dermatology conference. And I don't know if you've gone or if your audience has gone, but when you walk around, there's just studies about skincare, and it's everything. And then you have these huge, like blown up photos of every skin condition you could think of. You know, if it's acne, if it's an ingrown hair, there is a huge, you know, poster on it, and there's science telling you about it. But for a lot of times, what we're told, which is true, skin of color hasn't always been studied. You know, when you think about the Fitzpatrick system and all these things, and the challenge that happens is that when you don't look at everyone's hue, when you don't think about all these things, you can wind up with lasers that aren't made for us, and you wind up with laser burn. You can wind up with people who aren't familiar with how to treat us, and maybe they treat us the wrong way. So there are a multitude of things that can happen when we're not all taken into consideration. And so I also think being able to work with someone, you know, who is as concerned about our skin and also been practicing that way, like, that doesn't fall lightly on me. And so it's an honor to be able to tell his story and have people get to know more about that. So we're very fortunate.
I need to dive, after we get off this call, I need to dive into this man some more, because he sounds
amazing.
Incredible. Yeah.
He really, really is. He's funny, but he is serious about skincare. Like, if you have a question, Dr. Thoreau will give you an answer. He's very, very good.
Oh my gosh. I love that. So, you know, one thing I want to talk about, you talked about expanding into lifestyle and the ways that the firm has grown. For you, when you think about the future of First and Last PR, for yourself, for the brand, for your team, what do you hope that looks like?
I want us to continue to serve. And that's really what I look at our work as being. And I think that's why, for me, I'm passionate about it. You know, I think when you do anything when it comes to work, whether you're working as an entrepreneur or whether you're working in corporate, you know, don't just do it for the check. There has to be a reason behind it, something that motivates you, something that makes you want to get up in the morning and excites you. And for me, and for my team, it really is the work that we're doing and some of the changes that we're seeing. And to be able to look back and see how far the industry is coming. So I think for me, like, that is definitely the big motivator when it's there. And so for us, growth looks like being able to help more people by working with more brands. When we're able to work with brands for in-person events, this might have been before pandemic and probably coming out more now. I used to work for one of the Revlon professional hair care brands, and we did a lot of in-person events. And one of the things that I was able to do was meet consumers all the time and hear their feedback on the products and hear what their hair concerns were and give them advice on how to use things, how to detangle, like, what you should be doing. And so being able to see that direct impact, I really feel like the work that we're doing, it's not just PR, it's not just a placement, but we really are helping to educate people, and we really are touching people. So I think the more that we can do that, more purposeful work, that's really the direction that we're growing into, for sure. And I think on the other hand is also just being able to challenge my team as well to grow professionally, to grow personally, and to make sure that they're also feeling fulfilled in their work, you know, that they're able to go after and secure these interviews. We just did an interview for a publication, and I just saw it yesterday. One of the editors sent it over to us before it came out, and it looks phenomenal. Like, it's just a beautiful, it's a beautiful interview, and I can't wait to see what our senior account executive who helped to work on that interview, what her reaction is going to be when she sees it. You know, I want our team to feel proud of their work the way that I'm proud of the work that we're doing also. So I think our growth is kind of helping more people, but also empowering our team to also follow their dreams and their passion the same ways.
Oh, I love that. And it just goes back to what we were talking about. You know, the brands you work with are rooted in purpose, but I think when the business itself is rooted in purpose, that the sky is the limit for what you can do as a founder, as a team, as a whole entity.
For sure. Yeah. And I want people to know that someone, we had an opportunity the other day and someone said, oh, you know, I haven't done that before. And I remember thinking, well, you will now. At First and Last PR, you're going to do things you've never done before. And why shouldn't you? You know, we're all called for greatness. We're not called to be small. We're not called to be meek. We're called to do it. We got one life. We got one chance. We have to make it happen, you know, the end. And so I want this to be not a test kitchen, but I want it to be a place where people feel like they can experiment, they can have fun, they can push the envelope, still be professional, still get everything done the right way. But at the same time, I want us to have fun. I want us to be able to, yeah.
Yeah, the work environment should be a place where you feel comfortable to try new things. Like, even if you are scared, try it, and then you'll have that skill. Because I think I sometimes tell myself the same thing. Oh, I've never done this before. This is a weakness. But I just had a conversation the other day, and they're like, it's not a weakness. You've never done it before. So just reframing it in our brain, I think, makes the biggest difference.
Yeah. I think for me, there are so many things that I never did before, Olivia. You know, if I hadn't tried this, if I hadn't tried that, what if I said no? When my friend said you should go, you know, take that lunch, what if I said no? Mm-hmm. You know?
You're blocking your blessings.
Yeah. When the editor said, oh, you're on the dark side, what if I said, girl, you're right. Let me go back to editorial. You know?
Yes.
What if? What if? Yeah. What if? What if?
Yeah, definitely. And so the last thing I want to finish on is our beauty speed round. So if you're ready, I'll just shoot a few rapid fire questions
at you.
Should
I take off my glasses?
get ready. They're easy questions, though. They're easy.
Okay.
So the first one is, I feel most beautiful when?
I feel the most beautiful when I've just finished washing my hair in the shower and it's right before I'm about to style it. So I don't have any product. I don't have any makeup. I probably just have like serum on my face and that's it. And I look over and my husband's watching. And I think that's when I feel the most beautiful.
Those are, yeah, definitely two must-haves. Okay, the next one is, the last beauty product I bought was...
It was a fragrance. Let me think of what, you know what it is? I usually have clients. So it's like, so I was like, when's the last time that I did use something? I mean, most of the time we're using our clients' products.
Yes, I know.
It was a fragrance I bought. I know what it was. It was a fragrance that I bought on vacation. It was like a Juliet's Got a Gun fragrance that I bought on vacation.
Okay. The next one is, my beauty crush is, it could be anyone with amazing hair, like beauty looks, anything, a founder you represent.
Well, I would say my beauty crush is Morale, my friend Morale Hollis. He's a makeup artist and a groomer, and he's my beauty crush. He's creative and he's one of the nicest people that you'll ever meet. So on the inside and the outside, he's my beauty crush.
Love. Okay. My favorite song to get ready to is
anything Beyonce.
Yes. Renaissance has been on repeat for like
church, 2 months. Church girl.
Oh my God. That's a good one. My favorite is Cuff It right now. Yes. I alternate between that or Break My Soul.
Yes.
It's all good.
Yeah.
So many good ones.
I don't get dressed to Break My Soul, but that will be on throughout the workday. Or if I'm going for a power walk on my lunch break, mm-hmm. or I just need a little something. That gets it.
Yeah. It gets you going. Mm-hmm. Okay. The last one is, I love being a Black woman because.
I love being a Black woman because I am one. Yes. I love being a Black woman because there's so many layers and there's so much discovery and we're a lot of fun. Just a lot of fun. Yeah.
Yes, I love it. That's the perfect way to sum it up.
Yeah.
This podcast was produced by B.A. Kasanga. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you like what you heard, head over to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts to catch up on all episodes of The Hue Report. You can also stay connected with our growing Black beauty community by following us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at The Hue Report.